extreme radio for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the guy they call the Spaceman. This is A View from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. I'd like to welcome you in if you're driving around town right now or if you're at work listening to AM 640. Picking up the signal there, I welcome you in. Or if you're listening to me on Shaw Direct right now on channel 865, picking up the stream there, I welcome you in. Or if you're listening to me on a 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, I welcome you in. Or if you what some call the best seat in the house, bar none. Sit in front of your Mac, your PC at home, logged on to 640toronto.com, picking up the live audio streaming there. I welcome you in. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. The ratcheting up. World War III. You heard me. They're ratcheting up the beginning of World War III. Poroshenko has said the man who is the Western mouthpiece for Ukraine, who knows really who's in control of Ukraine? I believe it's Britain. However, he has said that we are technically at war with the Russians. And the NATO organization has come out with their spokesperson saying that, yes, we have definite proof that the Russians and the Russian army are inside Ukraine. You see, this week the Illuminati's plans for a global conflagration has been shifted into high gear. They've ratcheted up the Russian-Ukrainian situation, getting NATO, as I said, to announce the release of new satellite images this past Thursday that purportedly show Russian combat forces engaged in military operations inside the sovereign territory of Ukraine. These satellite image pictures, they have depict Russian self-propelled artillery units moving in a convoy through the Ukrainian countryside and then preparing for action by establishing firing positions in the area of Krasnodon in Ukraine. Dutch Brigadier General Nico Tak, Director of the Comprehensive Crisis and Operations Management Center, Allied Command Operations, said the images confirmed what NATO and its allies have been seeking for weeks from other sources. So you see, they have gone now to, yes, we've ID'd them, they're indeed inside the country. So over the past couple of weeks, we've been noticing a significant escalation in both the level and sophistication of Russia's military interference in Ukraine, says Dutch Brigadier General Nico Tak. The satellite images released provide additional evidence that Russian combat soldiers equipped with sophisticated heavy weaponry are operating inside Ukraine's sovereign territory. These latest images provide concrete examples, you see, for the Illuminati and the mass-controlled media, Russian activity inside Ukraine, but are only the tip of the iceberg for what's really going on in the overall scope of this Russian troop and weapons movements. Yes, they're ratcheting up World War III. We've also detected large quantities of advanced weapons, the general says, including air defense systems, artillery tanks, armored personnel carriers being transferred to separatist forces in East Ukraine. The presence of these weapons, the general says, along with substantial numbers of Russian combat troops inside Ukraine, make the situation increasingly grave as he ratchets it up in his rhetoric. This higher gear, as I'm calling it, comes days, just mere days, after it was reported that the Russian paratroopers Remember the ones that were caught inside Ukraine just a few days ago? We're only there because, well, they made a mistake, didn't know where they were. They didn't realize it was inside sovereign Ukraine. Right. Specially trained Russian paratroopers don't know where they are. And this was the week the terror threat level in the UK was raised to severe. Yes, big changes are now coming to Britain, just as was done in the United States of America back in 2002, setting up the Iraqi illegal invasion. Here are the changes to be made immediately in the UK. Number one, emergency legislation to make communications data available to police and security services will ratchet up. Working with the Kurds in northern Iraq to make sure that they had arms needed to battle ISIS will be done. Assisting the United States by providing intelligence gathering is another one of these changes in the UK that are coming, that are already starting to be put in place. And delivering aid supplies to communities displaced by ISIS as well. That's the humanitarian part. That's supposed to appeal to your humanitarian side, that we're the good guys. And the final emergency legislation to be tabled and made law, changes in levels of policing inside the UK, especially the numbers of armed police on the streets. Ferguson, Missouri, just a couple of weeks ago, this close to martial law. Well, there really was martial law while the curfew was on. This new alert level in the UK raises the risk of an attack on the UK to highly likely, as they're now calling it. Again, just as was done in America a few years ago. It's the same drill. It's the same exact scenario. Raising the terror alert threat without having any real reason to when they were doing it in America. Yes, just as was heard by the American people back in 02. We're raising the terror threat alert level, but there's no specific threat. Remember, we used to have these like every couple of weeks building up to the Iraqi invasion. As a matter of fact, they don't have any proof of anything whatsoever. Because if they did, you know what they would do? They would present it to you and say, here's our excuse for doing all of these changes in your laws for personal freedoms. But we're raising the terror alert level anyway because they can. Now, the Brits are hearing that same message as was told to the Americans back in 02. Britain's Home Secretary, Theresa May, has even admitted herself that there was no evidence at all to suggest an attack was imminent. Yeah, just like in America, remember the drill over and over, brainwashing the people, raising the terror alert, but no proof of any kind whatsoever for doing so. But people just go along lockstep. Yeah, I guess we should be more, are you ready for the word that they use in America? Vigilant. Yeah, Prime Minister David Cameron stated just Friday, yesterday, this is not some foreign conflict thousands of miles from home that we can hope to ignore. This fight has drawn in many countries from around the world. Yes, that's the way it was planned. It's global. You see, it must be deemed global for the Illuminati because they are only interested in the world as one, the globe. They think global only. Only, that's it. All the world must become involved and drawn into this pre-war propaganda if their plans are to be successful in fulfilling the goal of putting in place a system that will rule the world as one. More on this when I return on Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVSF. And I'm just getting started. I'm a guy they call Space. This is A View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. You can email me. I have two locations. I have space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. They start rolling in before the show. And let me just call her NN. Writes, you've been saying as it is above, so it will be below a long time now. Amazing. Your work and intuitiveness is right on. Did you see the movie? What she's referring to is As It Is Above, So It Will Be Below, released yesterday for the weekend. Just in time for the ratcheting up of the Third World War. My emailer goes on to say, looking to learn about the Golden Dawn. I will be talking about them, yes, but not on tonight's show. Friends of my niece's coyly stated that he was in Oro. You need to be heard every day. Thank you again for all that you do. Yes, the new movie, As It Is Above, I believe it's just called As Above, So Below, released yesterday, just for the weekend. And I've been talking about that very precept for a few years now, and that's why my emailer is just absolutely astounded that what I'd be talking about is now out in the motion picture theaters beginning August 29th, the year 2014. You see, they're becoming more overt, open, more and more all the time. Because you see, you have been brainwashed. We are in the process of being brainwashed to the point where we have to, well, react to the illusion that is being created. And right now in the Illuminati-controlled mass media, they are giving you the illusion that there is going to be major conflict in Ukraine with the superpowers. Russia as the enemy once again in America, and I guess, yes, I have been stating that for years now. Not months, not a year or so, years now. When Russia was all buddy-buddy, I still went out onto the radio airwaves and stated that Russia would become the enemy. How do I know that? I'm not a genius. It's easy. They're going to follow the King James Version of the Bible to the letter. Go to Revelation and read it for yourself. Russia will become, they are the power of the North in Revelation. Again, covering it soon on another show, on another evening. So back to the new terror alert ratcheting in the UK. Remember, it has to be global. That's why there are many countries from around the world right now. Have you heard the latest with the Philippine soldiers being attacked by ISIS in Syria? Global. David Cameron, the Prime Minister of Great Britain, went on about this point of driving home the message. He said, poisonous extremist ideology meant all Western European nations, not just Britain, could be targeted. And believe me when I say these words of Cameron's, they're going to happen. There will be staged attacks in all Western European nations, and quite soon. It's all part of the plan to create the illusion, to ramp up the world onto a war footing. This new level that's just been announced, just like it was in America in 2002, is the second highest of five. Second highest. Trying to drive home the point, point. Five possible UK threat levels. They are low. An attack is unlikely. Moderate. An attack is possible, but not likely. Substantial. An attack is a strong possibility. And now to the one they moved to yesterday. Severe. An attack is highly likely. And of course, the top UK threat level, critical. An attack is expected imminently. Yeah, they get all the talking heads, all these so-called experts, all the well-placed, well-heeled people to come out and state the case. The UK's terror threat level has been raised from substantial to severe now in response to the fighting in Iraq and Syria. Home Secretary Theresa May says that this new level rates the risk of an attack on the UK highly likely, although Ms. May said there was no evidence to really suggest an attack was imminent. Doesn't that, again, sound exactly like the United States back in 2000 and 2003 when the terror alert was used to muster support for the inhuman, demonic, illegal war in Iraq that then morphed into Afghanistan? You see, the Illuminati never come up with anything new. There's nothing new under the sun. It's simply history repeating itself over and over and over again. Are you not beginning to see through this black magic spell yet that's been cast many times before? I mean, back in 2002 in America, remember they had the color alert levels. Orange. Red. Remember those? Simply a brainwasher to give you this impression that there is big trouble on your doorstep. Not thousands and thousands of miles away, your doorstep, bringing the war to you. I mean, it seems that all that's required to so-called convince the average UK citizen to give up more and more of his or her personal freedoms without fight is to overdub a British accent into a video, put it on the internet, and then play that video back repeatedly for a week in the Illuminati-controlled mass media, claiming this is the killer of the hostage, James Foley. He's British. That, of course, being the journalist, the freelance journalist, who was supposedly killed, captured on video and then posted on the internet, whom I spoke about last week, who many now believe is a CIA operative who was kidnapped, not once, as I stated last week's show, not once. James Foley was not kidnapped just once, but twice. Yes, twice. Once in Libya, in April of 2011, Foley and three other journalists were kidnapped near Brega in Libya. Fellow photojournalist Anton Hamel was killed in the attack in which Foley was captured, we're told. Foley released from jail 44 days later. Quadruple 11. Four is the number of foundation. James Foley was building the foundation for the next one where he would die on camera. That's a double four, for double the power in the black magic spell that's created. That's what numerology does. The numbers have power, the Illuminati believe. The greatest magnitude is three times the perfect number to get the most success out of your black magic spell. James Foley then returned to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after he was released the first time, to thank the community for praying for his safe return. That kidnapping of an American was used to ratchet up to a fever pitch that aided the invasion of Libya. James Foley was a huge player in that Libyan invasion. Now it looks very much like the Illuminati are setting the stage to invade Syria next, which will draw the Russians in also before that's all said and done. So, the British Prime Minister David Cameron yesterday, now armed with this new propaganda tool being disseminated, this excuse, just as it was done, I remind you again, in America in 2002, when millions upon millions of Americans were told to be very vigilant. Remember, vigilant was the word that was used over and over and over. Be very vigilant of your next-door neighbor, the person next to you on the bus, the cab driver giving you a lift, that quiet person at work, those new people that moved into the neighborhood. The British government is now urging communities and families to report anyone who is vulnerable, a danger, or that is even perceived to be escalating toward terrorism by calling the anti-terrorist hotline, just as was done in America. The number was 0800-789-321. Yeah, Britain now has a snitch line. I was immediately interested in the numerology of this snitch line number, and after looking closely at it and bringing it down, well, my superstitions were thrown out the window, and reality hit me that they are serious about numerology, and my suspicions were confirmed. I was right. This is not just any superstition. Numerology. This has a pattern, and it runs throughout. They leave their calling card in numerology as well as other places. This number, 0800-789-321, breaks down in numerology to, are you ready? An 11. An event assigned with a number 11 in numerology by the Illuminati will directly aid and abet the rising of the Antichrist. It will have everything to do with it. You see, the numerological meaning of the number 11 is destruction. As a matter of fact, it was Friday, August 29th, that the announcement was made. More on the numerology on the date that was chosen. Next, Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. We got to call space. This is View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. A writes, along with the terror alerts, I noticed that Barack Obama wore a cream-colored suit when he came out saying he had no strategy. This is for ISIS. I think the suit's color, he says, is to make him look weak. It seems they really want people to be scared. America is about to fall. The American dream is dead. The president, who was once a very strong man, is now exuding an image of weakness. All designed in the plan. That's why cocky suit, light suit, not exuding power, saying they have no strategy to fight ISIS. And if you'll go back a little bit in the sound bites of Obama, you will find that this is more of a global affair. And that I'll speak about in a few moments with NATO's meeting in South Wales coming up next week. So the Americans will not be leading this charge. It will be Britain leading the world globally. America will be one of the go-to guys for military men and hardware, just as Canada has been. Yes, even the Ukraine has now asked for permission to join NATO. Can you imagine after they complete that little caper? So that means NATO troops will move into Ukraine. I call them the Antichrist Army because that's who NATO really is, the global consortium. Yes, an 11 directly aids and abets the rising of the Antichrist. Any event that is assigned the 11 by the Illuminati will be destructive. As a matter of fact, it was Friday, August 29th, yesterday, that this announcement by Prime Minister David Cameron of the UK was made. In numerology, the 29th is an 11 day. 9 and 2 are 11. In numerology, the number 11 is to never be broken down, stands by itself alone, can never be reduced, and it always remains an 11. But if, that's just an if, you break it down anyway, here's the number invoked with the date August the 29th, when they ratcheted up the terror alert and said they were going to put in new laws immediately in place. August, 8th month, 8, the day, 2 and 9, 29. 8, 2 and 9 equal 19. 9 plus 1 breaks down to a 10. 10 in numerology is the number of law. All the laws are decided by the one who lives in number 10 Downing Street. That's just in the UK. You find courthouses all over the world with that connotation, that number 10. There were 10 commandments in the King James Version of the Bible. You see where they get it from. Now, new laws for the new land, the police state called the UK. The British Prime Minister David Cameron also warned yesterday of new legislation that was to come that would make it easier to confiscate passports from British citizens flying out of the country. You may or may not be aware the British Home Secretary already has that power under what's known as the Royal Prerogative. And that is, the Royal Prerogative means they can withhold a passport to anyone or confiscate a passport of anybody's they deem a problem. In other words, yet another Illuminati event is being used to complete one more giant step toward a police state in the UK, and it's already well on its way in North America and World War III. Here's something you also may or may not be aware of, that power to confiscate a passport in Britain has already been used 23 times since April of last year. Ratcheting it up. Get it? To enhance the black magic spell even more, in that Downing Street press conference yesterday, Prime Minister David Cameron said, and I quote, Islamic State extremists who are attempting to establish a caliphate or Islamic State represented a greater and deeper threat to our security than we have ever known before. And to try to give it a little more weight yet, Baroness Neville Jones, Baroness, mind you, a former chair of the Joint Intelligence Committee, one of the Illuminati elites, was also trotted out before the cameras to say that this higher threat level was justified, not something you do for the sake of it. Oh, of course, Baroness. Do you hear the echo at all of Tony Blair's words in 2002 when Tony Blair agreed to go to war alongside George W. Bush over Iraq? You know, the records of an estimated 130 conversations between Blair and Bush, and then Gordon Brown, who followed later as the Prime Minister, and Bush having been blocked from being published in the UK. Now, just recently, a couple of months ago, it's been cleared for these 130 conversations, and there are some 25 notes, by the way, from Tony Blair personally to George W. Bush personally, and at least 200 British cabinet-level discussions also being withheld up until now, but we haven't seen them yet because there's still a delay on what went down there. And I'm telling you now, we'll not get that information until we are well underway in Ukraine with the new plan. In other words, the overlords are saying, here's what you can know and here's what you can't know. Just go along with us. Trust us. We'll let you know what pertinent information you should have and information that you shouldn't. Because, you see, all of these are going to be, well, up until they have redacted them and probably rewritten half of them when they do release them, the originals would be very damaging to Bush and Blair on how they tricked their citizens in the UK and in the United States of America to go along with their diabolical plan of fomenting hatred between the Arab and Christian world and invading Iraq illegally. This Christian-Arab hatred will be the basis on why we're going to have to fight World War III. Tony Blair is purported to have told George W. Bush back then, anything that you decide, I will go along with you. In other words, carte blanche. We follow whatever you want. Because then America was leading. America is not leading today. That's why you see Barack Obama acting the way he is. It's a clear message to the world. He's not to be the strong man. He knows that. He's playing the role perfectly. And it suits his personality. For all we know, for at least, you know, the people that want to have a look and see, this information between Blair and Bush, and people seem to forget very quickly and fall for the same old ruse. But the truth is out. I mean, a couple of years ago, it was broadcast that Tony Blair, well, they couldn't come up with the concrete evidence that they've been keeping back, blocking, which now is going to be released, and I don't trust that for a moment. But that information that Tony Blair went along with, lockstep, without any questions asked, has already been aired, even admitted by the Illuminati-controlled mass media themselves, that these men were in fact lying. This pact by Bush and Blair, then Brown, was made earlier in 2002, a full year before the invasion actually took place. These transcripts are going to show, they better show, because they have or had this information, which shall beyond any doubt whatsoever, that there was, in fact, a conspiracy to go to war, which not only ignored its legality, or otherwise, but also showed a willful series of deceits carried out by the then Prime Minister of Britain, Tony Blair, and George W. Bush, who are, well, still free, aren't they? No one was charged there with the war crimes. More when I return on this. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. I'm the guy to call Space. This is AVFS. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. You can email me a couple of locations, space@640toronto.com. Or spaceman@640toronto.com. SB writes, from Wales, by the way. Also this week, the Pyrebunga volcano was shaken by a 5.7 magnitude quake. Not only that, NASA's New Horizons probe will cross the orbit of Neptune en route to its destination, Pluto. That's all coming up. And also another plane crash at Tamanrasset Airport in Algeria, killing 7 people. And, oh, by the way, the security they have here in Wales is very high. But I noticed over the past couple of weeks, all of what was in the headlines was the Islamic fundamentalists in Cardiff. That's also in Wales, by the way, which is not far from the G8 summit, as he writes. I believe it's the G7 now, as Russia will not be attending that one. Then he ends off my email by saying, then we get a high terror alert. I wonder. I just wonder if the world is watching. SB. Yes, we are, SB. The world is watching, and it will be covered totally and completely by the Illuminati-controlled mass media. Just a couple of minutes. Maybe the sound of the hour break. Possibly. Maybe I can fit it in this segment. I'll tell you where that summit, NATO summit meeting is. I hope you've already checked for yourself, or are you not interested in this kind of thing? That will affect your life, right down to your very pocketbook, to the gas you put in your car, to your job. There's no time not to pay attention now. Now is no time. Take your eyes off the road as these guys are driving us into the ditch. The ditch being another all-out war. The war drums are beating so loudly now inside the Illuminati's head. They are getting so excited. The agenda is being pushed further down the road. Soon, the coveted goal will be achieved. Yes, through lies, through illusion, is how it's done with this black magic spell. The whole charade of government actions in the months before the war in Iraq started would be shown to be just that. A charade, if all of these documents are, in fact, released, these 130 conversations, and that is a 13 in numerology. I'm very skeptical of that information when it finally does come out, but it doesn't matter anyway. We already know, because let me remind you that the distortion of intelligence findings were rampant going into Iraq, weren't they? The demands for a second UN resolution, blaming the French, of course, for preventing the first resolution from succeeding. Let's get in there to Iraq. No, no, they've got someone who's saying don't. That was the French. And then the blatant lie that finally got the second UN resolution to allow it to happen. The pretense of wanting peace. If Saddam Hussein would just give up his non-existent weapons of mass destruction, all these were just so much spin and softening up, trying to get the public to agree to a war, which had already been decided upon, and which was already clearly about one thing, and one thing only, driving the Illuminati agenda of a global conflagration and replacing this old system with the new one once it's completed. And people are asking, just stop the killing. We'll accept anything. Give us our jobs back. Give us our money again. All of this raising of the terrorist threat alert in the UK happened right at the 17th. Yes, that number 17 showing up yet again. It's the 17th anniversary this weekend. Of what? Princess Diana's death, which was August 31st, 1997. That would be tomorrow here in North America. On the other side of the earth, in the east, it would already be today. All depending on where in the world you're listening to A View from Space, talk radio, AM 640, from. All of this has been orchestrated, of course, I believe, to create the rebirth of King Arthur in Prince William Arthur Philip Louis Windsor. Born summer solstice, 1982, which would require some extremely powerful magical energy indeed. That is to recreate the rebirth of King Arthur in another King of England. Yes, that will require some extremely powerful magical potions, which could only be raised by the ritual murder, a divine king, or a royal substitute. I told you all that to say this. I believe that Princess Diana was that divine king or royal substitute sacrifice as a royal stand-in for a divine king ritual murder that happened 17 years ago this weekend. What's more, for this vicarious sacrifice to be effective in black magic sorcery, the death sacrificed must have had to have been done near or before, but not after the annual ancient occult harvest home feast. And the date, of course, August 31st, do you think it fits for a moment? You know it did. Diana's death did fall inside that tiniest of windows of time. Which brings me now to South Wales. South Wales is where this NATO summit is going to be held. Here's what they say on the United Kingdom's government website. NATO Summit Wales 2014, on 4th to the 5th of September 2014. That's this coming Thursday, Friday. Wales will host the largest gathering of international leaders ever to take place in Britain as the UK hosts the NATO summit. President Obama, Chancellor Angela Merkel, President Hollande, are all expected to attend, along with leaders and senior ministers from around 60 other countries. The summit comes as NATO draws down from its longest ever mission in Afghanistan, and against a backdrop of instability in Ukraine. It's an opportunity to ensure that NATO continues to be at the forefront of building stability in an unpredictable world. Right. See what I mean about when I watch the Illuminati-controlled mass media, or when I read something from them, I think the exact opposite, and I'm generally correct on that, and the truth. So if they say they're continuing to be at the forefront of building stability in an unpredictable world, I would suggest to you that they are the reason this world is so unpredictable, because of their building of instability, not stability. Where do you think ISIS is getting their money from? A couple of really rich Arabs? It's the banking cabal. The ones that have been caught money laundering. The ones that have been bilking millions and millions of people from their own money. The Illuminati are funding. They always control both sides of a fight, or they don't get into it. So that's the summit next week. So where it's being held, at Celtic Manor Resort. It's listed as a golf spa and leisure hotel and resort in Newport, South Wales. It's a huge complex made up of a couple of adjoining hotels, a country inn, luxury lodges, a couple of spas, six restaurants, three championship golf courses. Matter of fact, Celtic Manor Resort hosted the 2010 Ryder Cup, the first ever to be held in Wales, by the way, and is now hosting the 2014 NATO Summit. Celtic Manor Resort. The Celts. The ancient mystery Egyptian religion conjured up in the Celts. Yes. The word Celtic doesn't belong to ancient Ireland and the UK. No, it was born originally in the Middle East. Back with more on the Celtic Manor Resort, the town of Newport, and the very incredibly, what should I say about Caerleon, steeped in Arthurian history. That's when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the guy that calls space. This is a View from Space. Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you for the ones that you've sent. I really appreciate it. I really do. CJ, let me call this person CJ. Question, how are the presumably large group of individuals who make up the Illuminati able to keep unity of purpose? Any group of humans I know, sooner rather than later, have internal disputes, thus weakening their power. So, question two, are the Illuminati human or alien? They're human, but they believe they're half man, half God, which is half alien, which is their father, Satan, not of this world. You see, they believe they are, in fact, related to the aliens who they tell us are watching us. That first question, how do they keep unity of purpose? It's simple. Do you know how secret organizations, societies work? They have a headmaster. They have the adept all under work for that adept and do nothing without their approval. and are rewarded financially and many other ways if they follow orders. And they have a way of controlling people. Masonry is their biggest controller. Within secret societies, there are other secret organizations also, till you get to the final top, which would be the very inner circle of the sovereign herself, Queen Elizabeth II. So you see, all are rewarded for, that's what knighthood is all about. And with that comes position. Ask Bob Geldof. He'll tell you, he's above the law. He stated as much on the Illuminati-controlled mass media. They are above the law. Jimmy Savile was above the law. The police knew in Britain what Jimmy Savile was up to with the children, but turned a blind eye because they were told to. That is the power of the elites, from the top to the bottom. And you're only trusted when you prove you can be. So, Celtic Manor Resort, where this G7 are going to hold the NATO summit. Newport is the town, South Wales. Newport. Let's see. Newport's been a port in Wales since, well, medieval times, when a castle was built by the Normans there. And that town really outgrew their earlier Roman town of Caerleon, the one I spoke about earlier, immediately upstream. It's not very far at all. As a matter of fact, you could say that this place, Newport, where we have the NATO summit next Thursday and Friday being held in South Wales, is a suburb of Caerleon, was there first. This town of Newport gained its first charter in 1314. It has incredibly ancient history. This is the area of the Druids, ancient Wales. This is the area of King Arthur. You'll find out in a moment if you're not already aware. It grew in huge, huge steps in the 19th century when its port became the focus of coal exports from the eastern valleys of South Wales. That is until the rise of nearby Cardiff in the 1850s. Newport was Wales' largest coal exporting port. Now, there's more about Newport. The county borough of Newport, as a matter of fact, granted city status in 2002 to mark Queen Elizabeth's Golden Jubilee. And that same year, an unusually large merchant ship, referred to locally as the Newport Ship, was uncovered and rescued from the west bank of the River Usk that snakes through both Newport and Caerleon, that ancient Roman village. And before that, Druids ruled. This ship, by the way, the Newport ship, has been dated to be sometime built in the 1445 to 1469 area, and it is the only vessel of its type from this period ever discovered anywhere in the world. So Newport has incredible distinctions. There are so many huge milestones in the formation of Britain with this town. And you can see that it is connected also to Caerleon. This place, situated right on the River Usk, right near the M4 motorway, as a matter of fact, that runs through this area. This town has strong connections to someone who I've talked about many times when speaking about King Arthur. It has huge connections with Geoffrey of Monmouth. That makes Caerleon one of the most important cities in Britain in the book Historia Regum Britanniae that I've talked about many times. And Alfred Lord Tennyson actually even wrote idylls of the king while he was staying in Caerleon, this ancient druidic town that became a Roman legionary fortress, the headquarters for Legio Augusta II from about 75 to 300 AD. And it was the site of also a huge fort, an Iron Age hill fort. The Romans called the site Isca, after the river Usk. And the name Caerleon is taken from the Welsh, meaning fortress of the legion. And this is where the NATO summit is to be held. Can you imagine the ritual spots for the ancient King Arthur? Because you see, Caerleon has an incredible connection to King Arthur. Geoffrey of Monmouth, as I said. Monmouth County is right next door to this area. He was the first author ever to write a lot about King Arthur. Monmouth gives Caerleon a long, glorious history from its foundation of a metropolitan area and building a cathedral there. And Geoffrey of Monmouth makes Arthur's capital, Caerleon, and even Sir Thomas Malory has Arthur recrowned there. That author, the still visible Roman amphitheater in Caerleon, has been associated with Arthur's round table element of the tales. Now, I suggest to you, King Arthur's round table is once again in that ancient area where it used to be held, being held again next week, the year 2014, with the NATO summit. More on my return with Talk Radio AM 640. This is ABFS. I'm the Spaceman, back with more right after this break. I'm a guy they call Space. This is A View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. We've just been talking about the NATO summit coming up next week, being held in South Wales in a town called Newport. The place would be Celtic Manor Resort. And Newport, basically a suburb of Caerleon that has ancient connections to, of course, King Arthur. Geoffrey of Monmouth, the first author ever to write extensively about King Arthur, names Caerleon as its capital. Caerleon also has associations with later Arthurian literature, as the birthplace of the writer Arthur Machen, who often used it as a location for his work. The Hanbury Arms was visited by Alfred Lord Tennyson, who lodged there while he wrote his book Mort d'Arthur, The Death of Arthur, that he later incorporated into his Idylls of the King. And today, Caerleon has a modern statue of a knight. Even today, they call him the Hanbury Knight. Arthur, High King of Britain, Caerleon is the castle where Arthur unknowingly commits incest with his half-sitter, sister, Morgaine, which resulted, of course, in the conception of his son Mordred, who would later bring about his downfall. It's steeped with Arthurian legend because if it wasn't, the NATO summit would not appear there this year when we're about to sit down at the round table with over 60 other countries and the main players there. That pecking order that I talked about answering that emailer's message about how they keep order. It's the pecking order, bloodline order. It's how it's done. It's how the money is divvied out also, from the highest to the lowest. To the purest of the bloodline, to the least pure. Yes, the Arthurian legend invokes another King Arthur to come soon, who will become the leader of this new world order. It's about Camelot. Camelot is code for the New World Order, the One World Government. Yeah. Another thing about Caerleon, the hospital there, been featured in many episodes on the BBC television programs of Doctor Who. Yeah, you've been there and don't even know it if you've watched Doctor Who. Yes, the round table is about to meet once again. And still on that same pathway to the Golden Age, bringing back the Arthurian age of one land, one king. Only this time, one globe, one ruler. That's all just coming up next week, Thursday and Friday. Should be interesting, because you know what they're talking about, don't you? Why this NATO summit was called. Why, it's to decide what to do in Ukraine and ISIS in Iraq and Syria. What do you think they'll do? Try to go the peace route and talk? No. It's NATO. Armies. Boots on the ground. So that makes the politicians having to get out in front of the cameras for the Illuminati-controlled mass media and ratchet up the cause. Give them plenty of ammunition to go to the people and say, here's what we have to do, creating the illusion. Do you think for one moment Vladimir Putin is really their enemy? He's their business partner. He's been instructed to recreate the ancient Russian Tsar's area of Russian control, which was pointed out here a few weeks ago, right here on AVFS Talk Radio AM 640. I can't cover it all, every single show. I can only tell one story, one night. This illusion has been going on for a long time, a ruse, a hoax, if you like. Yes, a hoax to suck you in to believing that you're in imminent danger, such as the raising of the UK terror threat level alert this week. And remember back in 2000, the illusions then. When the year marking the start of the new millennium came to pass, Just let me refresh your memory on these illusions. It was when the Western world was at peace. The economies were humming along great. And all the computers which supported that economy were all working perfectly. Back then, there were millions of people scoffing at the idea espoused by myself and others, who, just after the beginning of the new millennium, were soon expecting a doomsday scenario to come about that would change everything for the worse and set us on the road to World War III. They never believed it be possible for a world to become transformed into a one-world government led by one called the Antichrist. Some even boldly proclaimed a new age of peace and prosperity, a time of earth goddess worship. This was 2 years, almost 2 years, before the event that changed the world came about, September 11th, 2001. And after that, that illusion was created. The man-made economic bubble burst in 2008, which sent the world literally into a violent tailspin. With the first decade of the new millennium through, a realization had now sunk in that a new age was indeed being ushered in. The Western world was no longer at peace. Now there's a war on their doorstep. Two buildings knocked down in, well, more than two, in New York City. And now this terror threat thing has come out of nowhere, it seems, and has now brought it to the shores of North America. Then there was 7/7 bombings in Britain. You see, the illusion's pretty strong through the years when they keep repeating it over and over. Yes, a new age being ushered in, all right. The age of terrorism and the road to World War III started September 11th, 2001. Then the economies all buckled in 08. Here's your control of the banking cabal again. They were the ones that did that purposely. The angel of death had descended upon the land, and few with any knowledge of the King James Version of the Scriptures would hesitate to say that the end times were beginning to look like they were at hand. The old order is most certainly finished, and we are its last generation. All cultures through world history have actually predicted a bloody apocalypse at the end of time. From the Ragnarok of Nordic peoples that I've covered here to the end of the Mayan calendar. Predictions of wars, earthquakes, floods, pestilence is universal. Often accompanied by the return of that culture's father god, who then establishes a new order. And the world's knowledge and history chock full of this same scenario. One who comes to save them all, waiting for the Savior. Every single culture has it. This new one that returns of that culture's father, God, who then establishes the new order and reigns directly over his people once again for 1,000 years. As he had in the distant past. King Arthur. The Arthurian tales. Coming to life once again. And King Arthur coming to life once again. Possessing a person. So this has been going on all these thousands of years. That's why I repeat the line so often on this show all the time. There's nothing new under the sun. It's simply history repeating itself. That is until the goal of reaching the golden age returned is established. And then things will get even worse. More next. Talk Radio AM 640. I'm Space. I'm the guy they call Space. It's a view from Space. Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Two addresses to communicate. I do not communicate any other way. Yes, all cultures have predicted a bloody apocalypse at the end of time. Nothing new under the sun, it's simply history repeating itself. It's as universal as the stories of an upcoming Armageddon. Along with them are the traditions of past apocalypses. Worldwide calamities that destroyed civilizations that were established here before you and I even got here, bringing to an end the Golden Age, which is supposedly when the gods ruled directly over man upon the earth. The impression you get is of a recurring cycle of apocalypses, a ritual cleansing of the world caused by all manner of reasoning from cyclical pole shifts, planetary collisions, to destruction caused directly by man's spirituality from his falling away from worshiping the true God. The Judeo-Christian version of the apocalypse is no exception. Just a quick look at the revelation of St. John the Divine shows that it bears strong resemblances to the apocalyptic histories of other cultures. Things that those cultures say have already happened, which of course the archaeological records attest to. Backs up, proves, you see, seeing is believing. And that's why the Illuminati can do what they can do today, because of all the photoshopping, all of the incredibly black magic spell-binding video that you watch, creating this illusion. Seeing is believing. And after all, in this world of illusion we live in, run by our overlords and the druids, the Illuminati can make anything appear the way they want it with their black magic tricks. Written in a chapter called Revelation, in the King James Version of the Bible, the sun becomes black, the moon red as blood. A fiery mountain is cast into the sea. A star called Wormwood in Revelation falls to the earth, poisoning all of the waters. And the heavens part as a scroll, as if it's a scroll when it's, you know, rolled together and then rolled out. And every mountain and island moved out of their places, so states the King James Version of Revelation, chapter 5, verse 14. This matches almost precisely the stories of the destruction of Atlantis as described by Plato, and the flood of Noah as described in Genesis, and the book of Enoch also. Remember, there are two Enochs in the Bible. Watch out. Don't get them mixed up, because if you do, you will not be able to fathom what's really been happening. There are two Enochs. Events that occurred in the distant past recorded, but are described in the book of Revelation as chronologically coming before or preceding the rule of the Antichrist. Yet, thinking logically, you would assume that after all of the cataclysmic events described, that there'd be no kingdom left for this Antichrist to rule over. Certainly not one as grand and as glorious as Babylon the Great is described in this very same book. I mean, was St. John merely seeing visions of the past to prepare him for the visions he was about to have in the future? Was he just meant to see and realize? Was that this is a cycle in which the true God repeatedly creates mankind, rules directly over him, and then abandons him, then allows him to spread his wickedness all over the earth for a millennia, and then at some point, finally again, the true God shows up, destroys him, and rules over the few righteous remnants again for a second coming of the kingdom of God? Over and over and over again? Well, firstly, I have a problem with the true God being a destroyer of anything, people or earth, not even mentioning the desire to cast a curse, put a spell on anybody or anything. Not for even a minute. I don't believe it. But there is one thing I can be totally sure about. With these mysterious creatures they call deities in this world, and that is through their blood sacrifices, their love of ritual, and their incessant preoccupation with transforming man into a god. And his apocalypse ritual is certainly one of the most sacred, a ceremonial sacrifice of its greatest creation, mankind, which they apparently repeat every few thousand years. Yes, as I described to you in 2000, the world was humming right along, all the economies were wonderful, there was no terrorism, there were no wars, everyone was peaceful. But in 2001, the world was transformed to what you're living in and I'm living in now. How? Black magic illusion. Remember, an illusion is just simply something that looks like it's going on but isn't really. With the incredible invention of video, screen. Seeing is believing. Now it can be put together and people will go, look, see for yourself. It's real. You're showing a video to me. Not the real thing. These people cannot be trusted. You know that. Can you trust a politician? What a stupid question. Because the answer is obvious. Of course not. Yet, we give them that power. That's the illusion that's been created. Why would you give your power and go along with the system and say, oh, well, they voted? Your vote's no good. Your politicians have never done any of your bidding, have never done what you would like have them done or do. They always do the bidding of their master, the one who put them there, the elite. The deck is stacked against you and I. We can't get into their circle. It's impossible. Can't be done. They have a fortress built to keep you out, to keep me out. have billions, the rules all change. When you have trillions, you're printing money. You're the head. You're the well that keeps on printing it. And that's how you win all your battles. That's how you control people. You bribe. You murder. You blackmail. You get the right ones for the right jobs. And then if they can't be trusted, they do the job, you get rid of them as soon as they're finished the job. That's how it works. That's how this world really works. Realize 90%, stat just came out the other day, 90% of the politicians, judicial system, all of the positions of power in the country, banking included, are all graduates of one university, Oxford. You control the education system. You control who goes where in those power positions. The game's been fixed for a long, long time. When you enter a U.S. college, or any of the prestigious colleges, you know the first question they ask you? Has any of your family ever attended this college? It's about bloodlines. You don't share power with the riffraff, with the uninitiated, with the unwashed. You marry only into those same bloodline circles. And they're very careful to pick who marries who. Because the bloodline, you see, must be kept as pure as possible at the top. An interesting world, isn't it? That's how it's really run. And I defy anyone to prove me wrong. Of all the apocalypse scenarios from the various cultures, Judeo-Christian one is by far the most specific when it comes to predicting what religious political events will lead up to the calamity. Before the return of the King of Kings, Jesus Christ, the King James Version of the Bible states that the majority of the earth's population will unite under a single monarch, the spawn, the son of the devil himself, the Antichrist. He will be the sole ruler over a kingdom depicted in Revelation and take the symbolic form of a dragon. And by the way, a dragon just happens to be Wales' emblem, the red dragon. Finish this train of thought and return on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm a spaceman. Back with more in just a minute. I'm a spaceman. This is AVFS. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I don't have a cell phone. How about that? And I don't even have a cell phone. I just refuse to sit and look at a screen all day. And I got memories of my childhood that are like memories that I experienced. It's not a TV show I watched, which is what most people's memories are about. A TV show they saw. An episode or a comment. They can even quote them. As if they were their vivid memories of childhood memories. I don't have any of that. Played by myself as a kid. Made my own toys. Invented stuff. Entertained myself all day. No TV. Didn't have one. If I did, couldn't get it anyway. gravity is only picking up 100 miles or so. And the plains in Saskatchewan, there's nothing but the sky and the dirt. Hard to find a tree. So that's how I have these great memories out of my successes and my failures. Not TV shows. I didn't come home every day and sit on the couch as soon as I was finished doing whatever I had to do and watch. No screens for me. So no cell phone either. Don't need one. I communicate by email only, space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. I don't have any followers on Twitter. Don't want any. Got a radio show. I get it said. For how long? I don't know. Like one of my liners say that I wrote, by the way. The one that states, telling the story while I still can. Because if we go a little farther down this elevated terror alert level threat, it'll just take one attack, a major one in the Western world, where shows like this will be deemed, well, unpatriotic. Or possibly side of the enemy. And shows like this will not be allowed to air any longer. Do you believe that day may be coming? Did you ever think that they would deploy soldiers, SWAT teams, on the streets of North American cities? It's already been done over and over now. It's nothing new. Martial law is just a terrorist attack away. Yes, so the apocalypse scenarios, various cultures. The Judeo-Christian one is really the most specific. Remember now, it's represented in the Old Testament as preceding the flood. God's firstborn son was cast out of heaven for his rebellious nature, along with a third of the other angels who had decided to rebel against the true God. Remember now, Old Testament preceding the flood. And indeed, the whole event sounds like a mythologized account of a celestial occurrence. One that might even have accompanied a catastrophic polar shift. There's a dragon in astrology. He's called Draco the Dragon. The stars in the sky, as above, so below. It's a constellation that encircles the whole of the night sky and is depicted as swallowing his own tail. We're told of a polar shift caused this constellation to appear. And from the perspective of ancient man, that he, the dragon, along with one-third of the stars, had been cast out of the sky and into the sea. And the sea that the dragon would eventually rise out of again at the end of time. Which is what Revelation says. And out of the sea. This beast came as the Leviathan, the dragon of the deep, and the ocean itself, known also as the abyss, which ever since has been associated with him. Leviathan was said to be a sea monster, defeated by Yahweh in different scriptural accounts. Also, don't forget that Merovech, the first of the Merovingian sorcerer king's bloodline, was born out of the sea as his mother was swimming in the Atlantic Ocean one day, raped by the sea monster, Bistineptunus, and the half-man, half-beast Merivee was the result of the pregnancy of his mother. That is the beginning of the Merovingian bloodline, which I believe to be the bloodline of the family of Cain, and also the bloodline of the future Antichrist. Their father is Satan, who is a beast, a reptilian, and the mother is a human, called Eve. The sea monster legend could also be explained in this way. The sea monster could have been a foreign conqueror coming from the sea, taking the dead king's wife to legitimize his rule. That would be the story of Clodio and Pharamond and ancient mythology. There are many, many people, religious clergy included, who research this subject and are quite certain that the beast of Revelation represents the rising European Union, which is quickly coalescing from an economic partnership that's being centralized into a true political empire of nations, sort of the United States of Europe, a process that's been greatly sped up by the events of 9/11, and now even greater strides happening towards a greater unification due to all their governmental debt loads and forced rule changes on their central banks. All of this instigated by the Illuminati-designed global economic crisis. Many see in this union a revitalization of the old Roman Empire, held together in the Middle Ages by the Roman Catholic Church, as well as other Vatican-approved monarchs. Yes, in the ancient times, the Pope decided who was to be the monarch, the king, the queen. And most of these kings and queens, as well as their supreme head, their Holy Roman Emperor himself, came from royal houses descending from the family that first held the title New Constantine, a prototype of the Holy Roman Emperor title. I'm talking about families who believe they are of this Merovingian bloodline I'm speaking of. The Windsors in Buckingham Palace believe they are the descendants of Constantine. The Merovingians, Frankish line of German line of Merovingians, more accurately, the Bavarian royalty, which is who the Windsors really are, real name Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, a line that most European royals, as well as all 44 of the United States presidents, are descendants of. It's a family affair. So it's no joke when I say to you that Angela Merkel is from the same bloodline as Vladimir Putin, as David Cameron, as Barack Obama. I've been through the lineages on many shows of all the presidents of the United States, all 44 of them, descendants of the European royals. As many know, the Merovingians, including their modern-day descendants, consider themselves to be inheritors of the lineage of Jesus Christ himself through his wife, what? Mary Magdalene. As the story goes, Jesus Christ suffers the crucifixion but survives, flees with his pregnant wife to the Jewish-friendly area of southern France, where a substantial number of his kinsmen were already settled. There his descendants intermarry with local Visigoth nobility, giving birth to the royal lines that would provide Europe with all of its monarchs throughout history, as well as the heads of the Holy Roman Empire. That makes these people not only descendants of Jesus Christ himself, but also of the Judaic King David. That's why, even today, the royal houses of Europe mimic their Davidic heritage as the source of their divine right to rule. It's because these people believe the throne of David was installed by the true God himself of the King James Version of the Bible, who decreed that the office would be passed down to David's descendants until the end of time. As the Bible states, the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh come. Genesis chapter 49, verse 10. Space back with more. The other side of the break. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. This is ABFS. I'm the guy they call Space. It's a View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. And thank you for the one that you sent me. I appreciate them. Every single one of them, I really do. Thank you. Now, our Anglo-European culture, presumed by most to be made up of Gentiles with pagan ancestry, is the world's main proponent and bastion of the Judeo-Christian theology. Some say the 10 lost tribes of Israel can be found today scattered across Europe, Britain, other colonies like the early U.S., Canada, Australia. The evidence used is the names given to these places found throughout Europe that appear to be based in Hebrew. For instance, the word Brit comes from Berith, the Hebrew word for covenant, and that the word Saxons, as in Anglo-Saxons, Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, comes from Isaac's sons. By the way, Sax is part of the British royal family's true name, as I spoke about earlier. It's not Windsor at all, but in fact Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, which is where the word Goth comes from, which figures deeply into the overall plan that I'll touch on sometime on ABFS, Talk Radio, AM 640. There's also a number of locations throughout Europe, and especially Ireland, that could have been named after the tribe of Dan. Places like Dundalk, Dundee, Donegal, and of course, Denmark, meaning Dan's mark. The tribe of Dan, I believe, are the Canaanite tribe, with Cain as their father. Even historical Irish legends state that sometime prior to 700 BC, a tribe called the Tuatha De Danann, translated as the tribe of Dan, arrived on the coast of Ireland and settled down, driving out other tribes along the way, and later becoming fixed in Irish legend as a powerful, magical, semi-divine race of giants. There's the old Irish folk tale, too, supposing there was a visit by the prophet Jeremiah in 569 BC in that year, an elderly, white-haired patriarch whom the locals referred to as a saint came to Ireland with a young woman named Tetefi, who was the daughter of an Egyptian king, and her husband Simon Brach. Simon was the son of the king of Ireland, and the two had met in Jerusalem shortly before that city was besieged and finally fell. They then went back to Ireland along with Jeremiah. They took with them a harp that you see now on the Guinness bottle. You also see it in the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, or the Windsor coat of arms, the harp, an instrument first developed by the Cain tribe. The harp is a symbol of Ireland, actually known as the arms of Ireland. The harp is azure blue in color, astringent argent, a gold harp with silver strings on a blue background. These arms have been long Ireland's heraldic emblem. References to them as being the arm of the King of Ireland, the arms of the King of Ireland could be found as early as the 13th century. These arms were also adopted by Henry VIII of England when he ended the period of lordship of Ireland and declared Ireland to be a kingdom again in 1541. when the crowns of England, Scotland, and Ireland were united in 1706. They were integrated into the unified royal coat of arms of kingdoms of England, Scotland, and Ireland. The harp, adopted as the emblem of the Irish Free State when it separated from the United Kingdom in 1922, they were registered as the arms of Ireland with the Chief Herald of Ireland on November 9, 1945. Yeah, just after the Second World War. The logo is used on Guinness beers, I said. The son of the King of Ireland, Simon Broch, and his Egyptian wife, yes, Egyptian wife, T. Teffy, also took with an ark and something called the Leofail, which later became known as the Stone of Destiny. The stone upon which all British monarchs must sit on during their coronation. This is the same stone that the Brits believe Jacob's used as the pillow for his head, the one he had his head on when he dreamt of a ladder stretching between heaven and earth, the stairway to heaven, and thronged with angels, God standing at the top of the ladder and promising Jacob the land of Canaan. When Jacob awakens, he anoints the stone, Betelus, with the oil and names the place Bethel, or Betelus in Hebrew. Another account from Genesis 35 repeats the covenant with the God of the King James Version of the Bible and naming of the place as El Bethel, and makes his site of Jacob's own change of name to Israel. Both versions state that the original name of the place was Lutz, a Canaanite name, by the way. The Irish word Leofail, for this rock, is a palindrome. Know what a palindrome is? Well, it's a word that's written the same forwards as it is backwards. There are just a few. The Illuminati love palindromes. In other words, a mirror image of itself. That's why they love it so much. Because you see, in the occult, this means physically and spiritually connected. As above, so it is below. Yes, Jeremiah and T. Teffy. An old man arrives on an island, Ireland, with a small group of people in 583 B.C. He brings the daughter of a king and her husband, Simon Broch, as I said, and some relics. The powerful Milesian High King of all Ireland allows this old man, Jeremiah, complete control, instituting laws, schools, congresses. The old man forever changes the face of Ireland's history and subsequently the history of the entire world. Apparently, incidental to all this is the fulfilling of a 500-year-old prophecy. For as much people know about Jeremiah, I'm not sure if you knew that he was just not any prophet. He was held in a high-level position in the kingdom of Judah. Sort of the Illuminati of that day. He was the grandfather of King Zedekiah the II. It's recorded in King James Version of the Bible in Kings, of course. 2 Kings. Verses 24. And on. Most importantly, Jeremiah was the God of the King James Version, trustee of the bloodline of the throne of David. Now you know why the powerful Milesian High King of all Ireland allowed this old man on the island to have complete control, instituting laws, schools, and all of the offices. Now you know. It's all about the bloodline. Always has been. And with these people in control, it always will be. It's the tribe of Dan that's named by many researchers as the subject as being the tribe from which the Antichrist will come. For one thing, Dan is the only tribe not mentioned in Revelation as having been sealed on their foreheads as children of God. You must assume, then, that Danites are sealed with that other mark, the mark of Cain. What's more, as J.R. Church wrote in Guardians of the Grail, his book, and the man who planned to rule the world, four symbols are used in the Bible symbolizing the Danites: a serpent, an eagle, a lion, and bees. I'm back with more on those symbols when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. It's the Spaceman. This is AVFS. Back after this. The guy that calls Space, this is A View from Space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. You can email me at space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. I communicate with you by email only. Got some information you'd like to pass along to me? Got a critique of the show? Or if you just want to say hi and where in the world you're listening to AVFS from, Talk Radio AM 640, use those addresses. One of those. So as I said before the break, symbolism. It's all about symbolism because symbols have power. If I was to say to you, the cross, how many people died for that symbol throughout history? I'm bringing it down to a base level for you if you're a new listener to the show. Your favorite sports team. Say it's the Oakland A's, and you go into New York City wearing an Oakland A's hat and buy a ticket and go to Yankee Stadium, they don't know you from anyone, but your hat could get you into some trouble because of the symbolism that is the power of that hat. Symbols have power. Numbers have power. They have meaning. If you study music, you find that out. There's prime numbers. In buildings, architecture, structures, the right numbers make it look absolutely splendid. If the wrong numbers are in it, the building looks ugly. So you see the power. So symbolism, symbolizing the Danites, a serpent, an eagle, a lion, and bees. The serpent, medical industry. Satan, the snake. An eagle, Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Empire's insignia, symbol. Nazi Germany's symbol. America's symbol. The lion, the king of the jungle, royal symbol. On the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha heraldic crest, along with a unicorn. And bees, also a symbol, symbolizing the Danites and royalty. These first three serpent, eagle, lion, symbols now commonly used in European heraldry by Merovingian descendants. The serpent often depicted as a dragon now. Many times serpent can take the form of a dragon, which is Wales, the symbol, the red dragon, a serpent. Because you see, before the serpent became a serpent, in the Garden of Eden, when Lucifer fell, his appendages were taken from him, and he had to crawl on his belly as a reptile. The snake, the serpent. As wise as the serpent, we're led to believe in the education system today. The bees, though, interesting, aren't they? They're a symbol quite specific to the Merovingian dynasty. Here's a clue for you. Story of Samson. Go to the King James Version of the Bible, who was a Danite, by the way. Samson was. You find the famous riddle of the bees who made honey in the carcass of the lion which had been killed by Samson. The symbolic meaning of the bees represents the concept that the descendants of the tribe of Dan would one day try to bring about the destruction of Judah, whose symbol was the lion. And from the carcass of the lion, the tribe of Dan would attempt to produce the golden age of a world empire, symbolized by the honey. It's golden. Samson is even further connected symbolically to the Merovingians because he, like the Merovingian kings, had hair with magical powers that disappeared, the magical powers, when the hair was cut. As for the serpent symbolism, this is supposedly based on the association of Dan with the astrological sign of Scorpio. In ancient Egypt, the goddess Serket was often depicted as a scorpion, one of a few goddesses who protected the pharaoh. In another context, the scorpion portrays human sexuality. The surrealist filmmaker Louis Buñuel uses scorpions symbolically in his 1930 classic called The Golden Age. And while I'm still on about scorpions, there's this. The first two pages of Freemason Ian Fleming's novel, Diamonds Are Forever, the James Bond thriller, are told from the point of view of an African scorpion, which kills and eats a beetle and is then casually crushed and killed itself by one of the villains who James Bond would later confront and eventually crush. It's inlaid in everything. Just, we're laced with this propaganda, this illusion. And the beehive is exactly the way the world is to be run in the New World Order. There is the queen bee, who is the only one to eat the royal jelly. The best only. For the queen, the top. Then there's the worker bees, the drones, who have no sexual appetite whatsoever and do not procreate. Every bee, and there are many types in a hive, all have their place in the society, which is the way the world is going to be formed with this new global governance. The ones at the top will eat the royal jelly. They're there will be some that are not allowed to have children. They'll be the worker bees. They'll be the ones that just attend to the queen bee. Very high order in beehives. Naturally, in nature, found in nature, which is exactly what the Illuminati will copy. Nature. The Priory of Sion, the modern organization dedicated to the propagation of the Merovingian interests and to make sure that the bloodline is protected, has published a poem with the suggestive title of La Serpent Rouge, The Red Serpent. It contains 13 stanzas, each written for a different sign of the zodiac, a 13th sign called Ophiuchus. 13, by the way, is the Illuminati's favorite number. It's the number of the cult. 13 stands for reincarnation. You die and come back again in another body. Now you know why they love 13 so much. And 13 is their mark. Their occult signature. The serpent holder, inserted between Scorpio and Sagittarius, is Ophiuchus. Referring, of course, to the red dragon of Revelation, this poem alludes to a 13th sign, that is, the real zodiac house of Dan, the 13th tribe of Israel that's been hidden from public record. They are said to be the 13 Illuminati families, aren't there? The 13th family is this Merovingian bloodline I speak of, the purest of the bloodline of the tribe of Dan, who are the Cainites. The tribe of Dan is also totally associated with the serpent because of Genesis 49, verse 17, which states, Dan will be a serpent by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels. I believe the tribe of Dan wished to do more than merely destroy the line of Judah. It seems just as likely that Dan wished to unite with Judah, to intermarry into his bloodline, and rightfully assume his God-given throne through marriage. After all, both tribes are referred to in Genesis as a lion's whelp, indicating a connection between the two. An author, Harold Camping, once suggested that the king to come, the Messiah, will be of the house of David, Judea, but his mother will be a Danite. Does this refer to the fact that David's consort, his wife Bathsheba, was a Danite? Or to a more recent union of the tribes in the form of the Merovingian bloodline? More evidence for a Danite origin of the Merovingians lies in the fact that Merovis, the founder of the dynasty, is traditionally a descendant of Odin, linguistically connected with Dan, and that the Merovingians claim descent from the royal house of Troy, which was founded by Dardanos. Even has Dan in his name, son of Zeus, a figure we've associated with the biblical figure of Cain, with the origins of the Tuatha De Danann, the tribe of Dan. More of these tales when I return. Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the guy who calls space. It's view from space. That's all it is. Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. I've been talking about the Danite origin of the Merovingians. The group that are the crowned heads of Europe. All the royal families, you see, are now reunited thanks to Queen Victoria. through marriage. And the Merovingians had Merovi, Merovus, all depending on what source of information, but it's the same one, the founder of the dynasty, traditionally a descendant of Odin. The ancient Nordic tales. So you see, this family's bloodline is so intricately involved with religion of the ancient world. And the Merovingians also claim descent from the royal house of Troy, as I said before the break, founded by Dardanos, son of Zeus, a figure we've associated with the biblical figure of Cain and with the origins of the Tuatha De Danann. The tales of this tribe of Dan, Tuatha De Danann in Gaelic, have a mythic quality about them and match almost precisely those of the Nephilim, the fallen angels, who, according to the King James Version of the Bible and to other ancient legends, intermarried with mortal women to create a bloodline of kings that co-mingled with mortal genes with divine ones. Half man, half God, as I spoke about earlier, who the Illuminati believe they are descendants of. This was, according to tradition, the cause of the war in heaven in which Lucifer was cast to earth. Among the offspring of this human-angel sexual relations and then progeny was Cain, the first, who was, say the legends, the son of Eve by Lucifer himself. Cain went on to become the father of a race of giants called the Cainites, who built civilizations all over the world. Cain was the first ever city builder in the world, and founded a bunch of cities named after himself. You've got to watch out in mythology, because they try to confuse you by changing names. Cain is basically the same personage as Nimrod, who built the Tower of Babel. Although the race of Cain is popularly thought to have been cursed by God, the Bible says that God placed a mark upon Cain and all of his descendants, cursing those who would harm them, even after the murder of his brother Abel. In fact, the Cainites are remembered by every other culture as magnificent kings, teachers of wisdom, builders of nations. And they're still doing it. Even the word king comes from Cain. Cain was originally spelt Q-A-Y-I-N. Cain, which is very close to the English word king, was worshipped by his people as a god. That's why, depicted in the form of a sea bull or a dragon, a serpent with appendages. This was the Babylonian religion that was found to be so adulterous and offensive. It even included the sacrifice of babies in a fiery pit to a demon, one of the high lieutenants of Lucifer's fallen angels, Moloch. And yet many of the Hebrews, including their kings, actually practiced this religion. And the worship of the demon Moloch, who offered babies to the fiery, red-hot arms of the statue Moloch, which they heated. And yet many of the Hebrews, including the kings, intermarried with Cainite women who practiced this religion. So it's conceivable, if not certain, that the bloodline of Cain interbred with the Davidic bloodline that eventually resulted in Jesus. the Merovingian Franks alluded to their Cainite descent with their legend that their founder, Merovius, was the spawn of a sea bull called the Kinotaur, Binesti. The Merovingian Franks claim this. Merovec. Was the product of a sea bull called a Kinotaur, and who had raped the king's wife while she bathed in the ocean one day in the Atlantic. Kinotaur, by the way, is a word not to be found in any dictionary, but is etymologically linked with the name of Cain. Kinotaur. It was this intermingling of holy and infernal bloodlines that the Merovingian descendants, known then as the Angevins, were referred to with their use of the double-barred cross of Lorraine, said to represent both the blood of Christ and the blood of Lucifer. The same artery, the same vein. It's where we get the phrase being double-crossed comes from. And today, when you're double-crossed, you're being lied to. You're being fooled. And finally, you're being beaten, vanquished. Yes, the double-cross of Lorraine. The double-cross of the bloodlines of Jesus, the Davidic line, and Lucifer. The double cross. What's intriguing is the worship of Jesus as God incarnated in the flesh has led to a formation of a religion that is, in all outward forms, a resurrection of the old Babylonian religion of Cain. You see, the thing is, and it's true, a lot of the ceremonies in Christianity, including Mass, Communion, Baptism, Confession, are all taken directly from the Babylonian priesthood, as well as many of the symbols and idols used by Catholicism. The construction of the cathedrals exactly resembles the ancient pagan temples of Babylon, and even the structure of the priesthood, the same, along with the requirements of celibacy even, and the wearing of black. I've talked to you about black before on KVFS Talk Radio, AM 640. Black represents Saturn, Satan. Black also is supposedly representative of knowledge. But most importantly, the deities are, at heart, the same. All of the saints are said to possess powers that correspond with those of various pagan deities and are worshipped that way by many people, especially throughout the Third World. The familiar statues of Mother Mary holding the baby Jesus mimic precisely those of Babylon's Ishtar holding her immaculately conceived also baby Tammuz. Ishtar, Semiramis, Diana, Isis, in other cultures. Yes, I said Isis. It's not an army. It was an ancient goddess. Same spirit. Semiramis. Diana. In which there was a religion after. Diana. I'm not talking about Diana Spencer. Princess Diana. This weekend, by the way, marking the 17th anniversary of her death. like the Virgin Mary, was called the Queen of Heaven, Diana, and the Mother of God. So is Ishtar, because they're all the same person, Semiramis, Isis. Different cultures tell the same story. This depiction is also precisely described in the King James Version of the Bible with the 12th chapter of Revelation. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. This woman gives birth to a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. This person is the Antichrist, or his ancestor, Cain. They both match this description. The seven-headed dragon, as we know, or you may or may not be aware, is Europe. More precisely, the heads have a double meaning. First is that they signify the seven electorates of the German Empire, and also seven forms of Latin government. This is the seven heads, or seven mountains, on which the woman sitteth. The name of blasphemy will consequently be found upon the seven electorates of Germany. This, therefore, can be no other than that which was common not only to the electorates, but also to the holy of the Empire of Germany as a whole, or that well-known one of Sacrum Imperium Romanum, the sacred or holy Roman Empire. But what of the scarlet whore referred to in Revelation? When I return, it's Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS. I'm the guy they call Space. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. Jay writes, and I believe it's from Australia. Great show. Only found you a few weeks ago. You fill in all the gaps in my many years of experience and quest to understand. And ask me a couple of other more personal questions that I elect not to share. But I thank you for that. Now, as I said before the break, the seven-headed dragon is Europe. And the scarlet whore? Well, just who or what is the scarlet whore, referred to in Revelation as riding on the back of the great beast, the one called Mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of harlots and abominations of the earth? Well, can't be much doubt that Rome is the scarlet whore. It's made clear when it specifically states that the seven heads of the beast are the seven mountains on which the woman sits. Revelation chapter 17, verse 9. Rome was built on seven hills. The ten crowns represent the ten kings who will be in charge of the world. I told you, the world is going through a transformation. That's what all these wars are about, to break the world up into ten regions. Putin, Vladimir Putin, is following orders, Illuminati orders, to build his ancient Rus, as they called it, in the Tsarist days. He's putting that back together. Ten areas, ten kings, will be in charge, reporting to the 11th. And the one who owns, and I said owns all the goods, owns all the people. The scarlet woman is also said in Revelation to be in possession of a golden cup in her hand, full of the abominations and filthiness of her fornication. Not very complimentary. Revelation chapter 17, verse 4. So it would be no stretch to equate this cup with the Holy Grail, a traditional symbol of the bloodline of Christ and the womb that bore its descendants, the womb of Mary Magdalene, whose name Magdo in the Babylonian tongue actually means tower, as in the Tower of Babel. She also traditionally thought of as a whore in the Bible, and is worshipped, as a matter of fact, in southern France as an incarnation of Ishtar. In the form of the Black Madonna, she is depicted in Catholic iconic in all of their art as holding a vase filled with healing balm. As it says in the poem, A Serpent Rouge, the Red Serpent, which she used to anoint Christ as the King of Judah just prior to his crucifixion. And as we know that the filthiness of her fornication with Jesus is what begat the Merovingian bloodline that will once more rule the European Empire and this coming new global empire. Need more proof that I'm correct on this? Have a look at the euro. The coin. It features Europa. Doing what? Riding the sea bull. The Kinotaur. How obvious can that be? There were two competing myths relating how Europa, which is where Europe got its name from, came to the Hellenic world, but they agreed that she came to Crete, where the sacred bull was paramount. The bull? Zeus. In the myths, Zeus, in order to disguise himself, makes himself look like a bull. Zeus is, in fact, Satan, who can manifest himself in many forms because he is spirit and he takes over, possesses these personages. In more familiar telling, she was seduced by the god Zeus in the form of a bull who breathed from his mouth a saffron crocus and carried her away to Crete on his back to be welcomed by Asterion. But according to the more literal version, that begins the account of Persian-Hellene confrontations of Herodotus. She was kidnapped by Minoans, who likewise were said to have taken her to Crete. The mythical Europa can't be separated from the mythology of the sacred bull, which has been worshipped in modern Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Israel, Palestinian territories, and sometimes parts of Turkey and Iraq, and includes in around the area today known as Syria. Basically, what's being called the crossroads of Western Asia, the Eastern Mediterranean and Northeast Africa. Could it possibly be that Europa is in fact also the scarlet woman who rides the beast in St. John's Revelation in the King James Version of the Bible? Make no mistake about it, the putting together again, the unifying the old Holy Roman Empire via the European Union, as it's known today, is in fact a stated goal of the modern Merovingian public relations firm, the Priory of Sion, Freemasonry too, which has been manipulating European politics from behind the scenes for so long now. As early as 1942, the Priory of Sion began publicly calling for a United States of Europe to be ruled over by the kings of Merovingian descent. They even proposed a flag to the new empire. It's a circle of stars, like those which adorn the crown of the Queen of Heaven, and which makes up the flag of the European Union today. 12 stars, the royal number. 1 and 2, and the number 12 equals 3, the perfect number. Royal. An illustration from the Priory's official publication, Vancre, depicts a person holding this flag, made up of 12 golden circles on a blue background, riding towards a sunset that is marked with the astrological sign of Aquarius, and mounted on a white horse. A white horse is a pale horse. Pale horse, you say? Yes. That's very interesting. Supposedly at odds with Orthodox Catholicism because of their claim to be descendants of Christ and to be in possession of his true teachings, the Priory of Sion is also known under the official title Circuit. C-I-R-C-U-I-T, an acronym for French words which are translated to Chivalry of Catholic Rules and Institutions of the Independent and Traditionalist Union, Circuit, which is easy to see how the Roman Catholic Church could be reformed, changed a bit, tweaked just a little. Oh, say by the supposed descendants of Christ, armed with his as yet unrevealed teachings and formed into a true universal church that could assimilate Protestants, Jews, and even pagans. Think of all the changes through the years in church practices. It wasn't long ago when I was talking about the Roman Catholic Church changing its mass. It was first said by the millions and millions of Catholics around the world incorrectly, and many of them said they were so confused as to what was going on with the changes. By the way, that day they changed it, not long ago, was a backward 9/11 day. It was the same day Vladimir Putin chose to become leader of his political party in Russia to run for the Russian presidency again. Of course he wins and moves Russia into a place where they are, once again, an enemy of the West. That's what his job was to be. This Priory of Sion collusion with the chivalry of Catholic rules and institutions of the Independent and Traditionalist Union, creating a universal church, could then be used as a theological basis for a revised Holy Roman Empire ruled by an emperor with descent from the House of David to fulfill biblical prophecy and the bloodline of Cain, known as the Merovingian dynasty of sorcerer kings. That would make that person acceptable to all three religious groups. Talk about unification? Wow. I'm Space. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS. I'm a guy that calls Space. This is A View from Space, Talk Radio, AM 640. I communicate by email only. Two locations, spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Before the break, talking about the Priory of Sion and its collusion. Yes. There is a conspiracy afoot. It is to put a usurper of the bloodline of the ancient King David, as well as the bloodline of Cain's family, onto the throne of a world kingdom. That's what the conspiracy is. Sound far-fetched? If you're listening to me, first couple of times, many people walk away after the show, but they listen to the end and say, he's crazy. Absolutely out of this world. But the longer they listen, the more they hear, the more they become convinced that I am correct. This priory of Sion collusion with the chivalry of the Catholic group, the Holy Roman Empire, reestablished. It's the European Union. So, a king will come along, a messiah to all cultures, that is going to be, as I said before the break, acceptable to all three religious groups. A messiah for all cultures ushers in an era of spiritual revival and global unity. He may even function as a priest king, and because of his lineage, might be worshipped as the incarnation of God. This all sounds, to most researchers on the subject, a perfect description of the Antichrist. The false prophet who initiates the worship of the Antichrist, described in Revelation as the beast with two horns like a lamb. Horns represent power. These two may well be the bloodline representative of the Merovingian bloodline and the head of the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope, who, by the way, wears a mitre. Hat which has been modeled after the hat that was traditionally worn by Nimrod, Cain. As well as reuniting the European Empire, the Merovingians' descendants also covet the throne of Jerusalem. As you can see, they've surrounded it now with trouble, meaning Jerusalem, which they again believe is rightfully theirs, through Davidic messianic descent, giving them the belief that the God of the King James Version of the Bible gave that land, gave Jerusalem to them. Through their military arm, the Knights Templar, Priory of Zion, initiated the Crusades to capture Jerusalem from the Saracens, aiming to make it a part of the Holy Roman Empire. The reason why they're called the Knights Templar is because the Templars were first chartered. Their headquarters were situated on the Temple Mount itself with the help of the Merovingian bloodline descent Baldwin, who held the title King of Jerusalem. This title was held up until July 4th. A couple of years ago, by a Merovingian descendant, Otto von Habsburg of Austria, who died on America's 235th birthday, by the way, July 4th. He was a member of the European Parliament of the Christian Social Union of Bavaria. He was also a member of the most incestuous family of all the royal families in Europe, reason being to keep their bloodline the purest of any, the Habsburgs. Pedophilia running rampant in that group also. This is the dynasty that last held the throne of the Holy Roman Emperor. Potential claimants today are? Well, there are a few. I mean, potential claimants of the King of Jerusalem, my bloodline. There are several, but disputed inheritance of title. None of them have None of these have claims or any power in the area of the former kingdom. The first one is Juan Carlos I, who was the king of Spain until he's just recently abdicated this year in favor of his son Philip VI, who was his only son, by the way. Victor Emmanuel, Prince of Naples, also a claimant to the royal throne of Italy, the House of Savoy, claims to have lineage strong enough to become the King of Jerusalem, as does Amadeo, 5th Duke of Aosta, claimant of the royal House of Italy, House of Savoy-Aosta. Karl von Habsburg, I've just mentioned, claimant to the imperial throne of Austria, who has just died, in the royal thrones of Hungary and Bohemia, the House of Habsburg-Lorraine. And Infante Carlos, Duke of Calabria, claimant to the royal throne of Two Sicilies, the House of Bourbon, and Two Sicilies' Calabria line. Another claimant to the throne, the King of Jerusalem title, Prince Carlo, Duke of Castro, claimant to the royal throne of Two Sicilies, House of Bourbon and Two Sicilies' Castro line. Charles Antoine Lamoral, Prince of Ling de Tramuel, heir general of Yolande Louise of Savoy and Brienne, claims. Now, after the Crusaders ultimately lost the Holy Land, which remained under Muslim influence until Britain, Israelite descendants, and the World Zionist Congress created the modern state of Israel, a homeland for apostate Jews, which officially came into existence in 1948 with the assistance of military might, I might add. This was one of the major signs of the coming of the apocalypse, according to many researchers on this subject, laying the groundwork for the creation of this new Jerusalem. Since that time, there's been nothing but conflict between the occupying Jewish settlers and the uprooted Palestinians, a group named after the Bible's accursed Philistines, who worshipped Cain in the form of the fish god named Dagon. This conflict threatens now more than ever to erupt into a massive world war between the Islamic East and the West, a conflict that will result in the predicted final battle of Armageddon. Another sign of the end result in the predicted final battle of Armageddon, the Illuminati will soon be undertaking the rebuilding of the Temple of Jerusalem and the erection of the Abomination of Desolation, as it's called, an idol of the Antichrist, to which sacrifices will be made within the temple's inner sanctum. What's absolutely eye-popping about this is that some have claimed that this is already in the works. Guy Patton writes in his book, Web of the Gold, that Rabbi Ariel Bar Tzadok and the expert of the Torah and Kabbalistic prophecy reported in 97 that a cornerstone for the future Third Temple had already been laid less than 50 meters from the mosque at the center of the Temple Mount. Patton believes that if any of the lost treasures of Solomon's temple were to be discovered and publicly revealed, the effect on the Jewish communities in Jerusalem and elsewhere would be dramatic, almost certainly resulting in a call from the Orthodox to rebuild the Great Temple. I'm the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. There's more right after this break. Well, a guy they call Space, it's a View from Space, Talk Radio AM 640, emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. This one from BV, Aloha, listening from Merida, Mexico, capital city of the Yucatan. You are so telling it like it is. I've been here almost a couple of months, hired as an English teacher, and all I see are the remnants of a once thriving culture that was smashed in the teeth by the Catholic Church. It's totally disgusting listening to the locals say that local pyramids were actually broken down and the stones were used to build the foundations of the cathedrals with, which were supposed to be erected to worship God. I was told by the people who raised me that God is love, and that appealed to me when I was young and innocent. But I soon learned that what we're being told about God is nothing but dark, evil, and disgusting. Thank you so much for what you do, sharing your message. Getting back to Guy Patton in his book. Web of Gold. Rabbi Ariel Bar Tzaduk, expert of the Torah, Kabbalistic prophecy, says that already a cornerstone is being laid for the third temple, not far from that Temple Mount. Less than 50 meters, to be exact, from the mosque at the center of the Temple Mount. Patton believes that if any of the lost treasures of Solomon were to be discovered, as I said, and revealed publicly, the Jews in Jerusalem would be just so primed and ready to accept possibility and the call from the Orthodox Jews to rebuild this great temple. The Priory of Zion has publicly announced that they have actually possessed some of these items already, and although they have yet to be revealed, something of a temple reconstruction did take place back in 2001 when, as David Hatcher Childress wrote in The Hitchhiker's Guide to Armageddon, Israel unveiled the virtual temple, a computer replica of the ancient temple, and what it was like to visit that holy sanctuary. The press release put out for that event reported that the computer simulation is just part of a new interactive museum that opened just outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which sits on the land where Jews believe the remains of their two temples, one built by Solomon and the second by King Herod, are buried. This rebuilding of the temple seems to be a part of a plot, not only by the Kabbalists, but also on the part of the Vatican and the Brits, which appears to be commencing an effort to unite with Judaism and form a true one world religion. Some say a secret deal was signed with the Pope, promising the Vatican hegemony over Jerusalem's old city. The city would stay the capital of Israel, but would be administered by the Vatican. We'll see. The city would have an Israeli mayor and a Palestinian mayor, both under orders from the Holy See, Vatican. But what about the Vatican aiding the Nazis in World War II? That's already been taken care of. Former Pope John Paul II made this formal reconciliation with the Jewish nation. Don't you remember? Apologizing for the Vatican's relationship with the Nazis during the Holocaust, and on March 11th, 2001, yes, an 11-day. The then-Israeli president, Moshe Katsav, was named by the Bild newspaper in Germany as saying that he was firmly in favor of his country joining the EU. Katsav's presidency ended in controversy, of course, as he was convicted of two counts of rape, obstruction of justice, other charges. And on March 22nd, a double 11 day. In 2011, in a landmark ruling, Katsav sentenced to 7 years in prison, appealed his conviction to the Supreme Court of Israel, and November 10th, 2011, the number of law, the Supreme Court upheld Katsav's conviction and punishment. Politics is such a dirty game. The Illuminati use blackmail, bribery, murder, and all forms of coercion to get their way. They are ruthless, just like their father, Satan. But are the Bible stories being literal when it speaks about the Antichrist as a king who will sit on the throne of David? Or will he be a mere president or prime minister? Tim Cohen, who believes that the Merovingian descendant Prince Charles of England is the actual Antichrist, claims that the prince, who, by the way, has been asked to be called the defender of the faiths instead of the defender of the faith, if he ever assumes the throne of England, has put in a formal request to become the king of the European Union as well. But monarchy is an anachronism of the past, is it not? So both patriotism and religious faith were thought of as anachronisms. That is before September 11th, 2001, where the world was transformed. Now they are back with fury, these monarchists. How far away is a revitalization of the monarchical system? It's hard not to notice that America's president is related to that bloodline. President Bush Sr., the equivalent of a monarchical succession, had his son take over after him. He even appeared to be carrying on the work of his father, fighting a continuation of his father's battle with the Islamic world, complete with many of the same cabinet members. George W. has achieved an unprecedented unification of the public behind himself and his agenda, and acquired a loyalty from the populace not seen since the institution of representational government replaced that of the monarchy. The Bushes saw their terms in office as reigns in messianic terms, and have been quoted as saying that they believe themselves to be on a divine mission. They spoke about the perceived enemy as evildoers and the war on terrorism as the new crusade, exactly like the crusades that were started by the ancestors of this family, the Knights Templar. And now Barack Obama, also a descendant of Edward I of England and William the Lion of Scotland, as well as the Irish King Brian Boru, the founder of the O'Brien dynasty. Indeed, America has a royal family, and they're the family members of the European royal families. So the men in charge of the Western world, who have the power to manipulate world events that would make Armageddon possible, are aware that the prophecies of the end times are being fulfilled, and guess what? They're doing nothing to stop it, but in fact are working to bring them to fruition. I refer you to the NATO summit coming up next Thursday and Friday in Wales in Newport, just outside of King Arthur's ancient haunt of Caerleon. Could it be that they're consciously fulfilling what they see as their apocalyptic destiny? and are purposely commencing steps to hasten the rise of the Antichrist? I believe they are. Are the leaders of the Western world willing servers of the powers of evil? The answer to that question, I'm sure, you'll get from me an unequivocal yes. We know that the Merovingian kings are associated with a bloodline that has long practiced religious rites absolutely forbidden to the Israelites by their God, but which nonetheless captured the allegiance of many of their kings. We know that these religious rites are still practiced today by the secret societies to which a lot of the leaders in the power positions in the world belong, and that these leaders come from this bloodline as stems from Cain, who was believed to have been cursed, the son of the devil himself. And this is also a trait that the prophecies say will be shared by the Antichrist. The mark of Cain, which the true God supposedly placed on his forehead as a seal of protection against the vengeful tendencies of his countrymen, may be the equivalent of the mark of the beast, which the Antichrist will one day force his subjects to be branded with. I'm a spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. More right after this break. I'm a spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. This is AVFS. I communicate, as you know, possibly aware, by email only at spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thank you so much for the one you've sent tonight. There's so many that I could not possibly get to and read on the air. But nevertheless, even though they didn't make it to air, I thank you so much for the one that you've sent. Before the break, I was talking about this mark of the beast, the mark of Cain, which King James Version of the Bible supposedly places on the forehead of Cain as a seal of protection against vengeful tendencies of his enemies. And that could be the equivalent of the mark of the beast, which the Antichrist will one day force his subjects to be branded with. From an Orthodox Christian perspective, any global government set up by such a person would be the kingdom of Satan, and any religious images that he might erect in a newly rebuilt Temple of Solomon would truly be an abomination of desolation. But it's more complicated than that. Evidence indicates that these Merovingian descendants see themselves as fulfilling a cosmic destiny that is beyond good and evil. How so? To them, fulfilling their preordained role in history is a sacred duty. Whether for good or for evil. And that any end justifies any means. Now, does that make sense to you why the world runs the way it runs? This is one of the most basic and universal tenets of the secret societies and mystery schools to which our global leaders belong. In fact, the value of achieving a balance of good and evil energies is one of their most treasured secrets. And they seek to embody that principle in every single thing they do. That's why they cling to charity so much. They see the devil as the brother of Christ. And some even see the Antichrist as a part of a sort of a second Messiah. In the Quran, there's a tradition which states that there will be two messiahs at the end times. The Messiah, Ben David, and his arch-rival, the Messiah, Ben-Joseph. So, it appears that what the members of the bloodline of the Holy Grail have set about to do, and certainly does not appear that they intend to sit back and let destiny unroll before them like a carpet. No, they actively work, plot, and conspire to bring about their prophesied personal destiny. Evidence indicates that Jesus Christ actually conspired with others to fulfill the traditional messianic prophecies of his culture and actually became the Messiah by means of his actions and will. This concept was explored in the 1960s with the publication of Dr. Hugh Sconfield's book called The Passover Plot. It's a major component of the theory that Christ faked his death on the cross so that he could go on to father a royal dynasty in France. Might not his descendants now be enacting an apocalypse plot in order to hasten the return of God's kingdom on earth? They also see themselves as descendants of Cain, destined to be and bring about a new golden age, with a global empire much like that which existed during the ancient reign. Now, Eastern tradition says that every new age is opened by an avatar, an incarnation of God. That's what an avatar really is. Today's avatar is someone who represents you on the internet. Yeah, see, you're God. But the actual description of an avatar, the description means the incarnation of God on earth. It's one of the titles used by Cain, who overthrows the old order and institutes a new order throughout the world. Since the prevailing order today is mainly Judeo-Christian, any avatar of a new age would be perceived by adherents as the old order, as necessarily anti-Christian, even if he is of the same bloodline as the previous avatar, Christ. Indeed, throughout history, kings have most often had their kingdoms overthrown by their own children. Orthodox Christians might find it sickening irony that the Antichrist would actually be one of Christ's descendants, but also, to the servants of the Holy Grail, it's seen as a poetic and preordained situation. They also understand the necessity of apocalypse in between ages to cleanse the earth of anything that is unfit to exist within the new paradigm. This is the burden of destiny that the members of the Grail families have evidently taken upon themselves, and they stand poised to lead the world into this golden sunset marked as it is in the Vane Cree illustration with the sign of the age of Aquarius. It's this astrological age, which our world is right now in, this minute, plummeting into the sign of the water bearer, fresh on the heels of the previous age of Pisces, the fishes, another water sign. This, according to a lot of researchers, signifies the previous age from which we're just emerging was dominated by Christian ideology. Pisces, the fish. Christ, the fisher of men. Since Jesus Christ's major symbol before the imposition of the paganized cross, as is his insignia, was the ichthys, the fish sign. But why are there two fishes in the zodiac sign of Pisces? There are two. If Christ was one of the fish, well, who does the other represent? An interesting interpretation found in the alchemist occult secret society member Carl Jung's book, Ion. Researchers into the phenomenology of the self in a chapter called The Ambivalence of the Fish Symbol, he looks at Jewish Kabbalistic traditions which state the time preceding the coming of the Messiah falls into 12 parts, and the Messiah will appear in the 12th, at the end. As a time division, the number 12 points to the zodiac, of which the 12th is the fishes. Leviathan will then rise out of the sea. As it states in the Bible, the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung, and occultist, states that the Pisces were originally not mere fishes, but two sea monsters mentioned in the Bible. One was Leviathan, the other Behemoth. These two beasts, eternally locked in conflict, represent, he says, the Lord Yahweh struggling with his split-off shadow self, the devil, Jesus, and Satan. They also symbolically allude to Christ and his twin brother, the Antichrist. These two, family feud, shall in the end fight one battle, equivalent to the battle of Gog and Magog, mentioned in Revelation in the King James Version of the Bible, says Jung. Afterwards, apocryphal tradition teaches that Leviathan will be cut up and severed as Eucharist food to the righteous few who survive the tribulation. This symbolizes the end of the Pisces age, and any kingdom that would be established afterwards would rule during the age of Aquarius. The importance of all this fish and water symbolism should be obvious to anybody who's read the book Dagobert's Revenge. And I've also said many times on talk radio AM 640, A View from Space, that the messianic Merovingian bloodline descendants, not only from Christ are they from, the fish, do they believe, and the Judeo-Christian line of David, but also from the tribe of Dan, the Philistines, the Canaanites, the Phoenicians, the Babylonians, the Sumerians, and ultimately the ancient Atlanteans, whose world-famous monarch, Cain, the Kinotaur, Cainotaur, is the Merovingian's most celebrated ancestor. All of these groups were well known in their times as sea peoples who had built their empires mostly with their mastery of the skills of navigation, of being the only ones to be able to circumnavigate the globe via the stars. Also, Cain, as you'll recall, was the inspiration for the legendary figure of Leviathan. Cain's glorious Atlantean empire was destroyed in the previous apocalypse and sank beneath the salty green waves of the Atlantic Ocean. But the stated goal of Cain's Merovingian descendants and the current world leaders who serve them is to build Atlantis. This resurrection is often pictured as actually involving the continent of Atlantis literally rising up out of the sea, sort of like Leviathan is prophesied to rise out of the sea at the end of the world. I believe this prophecy merely symbolizes the rising global empire that the Merovingians are bringing to fruition right now. Such an unbridled beast will need to be reined in by a strong master, a messianic king who will rule the nations with an iron scepter and hold dominion over the entire earth. I'm Space. This is Talk Radio AM 640. More next. From the guy on the call, Space, this is a View from Space, Talk Radio AM 640. You can email me, space640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. Another from Wales tonight. Space, I'll be protesting the day of Cardiff Castle, where the heads of the state are having their NATO meeting. Is there any reason or some connection why it's there? Just a thought. I'm sure DJ did not hear the beginning of the show. Signed, DS, Wales. Well, there'll be more on this on that next week's show, of course. But tonight, the powers that be, the ones that are calling this meeting of the NATO summit in Wales next week to talk about what they're going to do militarily. This is NATO. This is not sanctions. This is military. They'll be coming up with their agenda there. Now, it's not known when the Merovingian dynasty began, the beginning for all of this illusion in our world, for the rule over the Frankish kingdom seems to have already been well established by the time Merovaeus rolls around, the source of the line's name and the first king of that line to have made his way onto the historical record. Before this, there's no other line of Frankish kings whom the Merovingians would have usurped. This simply had always been the only royal family, as far back as anyone could remember in history. The life of Merovaeus does, however, reveal him as being worthy of being called the progenitor of the dynasty, because his conception was in no way natural. Merovaeus was, according to the legend I said, the spawn of two fathers. One, the Frankish king Clodio, and the other, a mysterious horned sea bull called the Kinotaur, who raped his mother, Clodio's wife. The king's wife, already pregnant, she was swimming in the ocean and managed to magically inject his own seed into the developing fetus, commingling with his own inhuman blood with that of the Frankish king's. This is why Merovaeus' name bore inhuman blood, and with it, the French word for sea, and why his descendants, the Merovingian kings, were believed to possess magical, superhuman powers. See, Merovingian begins with the word, with the syllable mero. Mer is French for ocean, the sea. As Holy Blood, Holy Grail, the book, states, according to tradition, Merovingian monarchs were occult adepts, initiates in arcane sciences, practitioners of the esoteric arts, black magic sorcerers, worthy rivals of Merlin the magician, the druid's main man, their fabulous near contemporary. They were often called the sorcerer kings or the Aumaturge kings, by the virtue of some miraculous property in their blood. They could allegedly heal by the laying on of hands. And according to one account, the tassels on the fringes of their robes were deemed to possess miraculous curative powers. They were said to be capable of clairvoyant or telepathic communication with beasts and with the natural world around them, and to wear powerful magical necklaces. And that's been actually inlaid into our subconscious minds also. The talking, communication, telepathic with beasts. If I could talk to the animals. I'm sure you remember that as a kid. They were possessing an arcane spell power that protects them and grants them phenomenal longevity, which history incidentally does not seem to confirm. And other rumors about these Merovingians were very specific. For starters, each bore a birthmark that consisted of a red equilateral cross. I think you could say it would be the Maltese cross, the ancient cross, the sun worshippers' cross, nothing to do with Christianity, the Maltese cross, used by the Nazis as the highest medal in bravery. The Iron Cross, it was called. You see, the Nazis are the royals. They were called the long-haired kings, the Merovingians, because they refused to cut their hair, which was either blonde or, according to most accounts, red, and contained the essence of their magical powers. At death, it would appear that they partook of the ancient ritual of trepanation, allowing the soul to escape to the afterlife through a hole drilled in the deceased's skull. They were also ritually entombed with strange occult artifacts, so much like the Egyptian pharaohs, because that's where the original ideas were from. The ancient Egyptian mystery religion. In the tomb of Merovae's son, King Childeric was buried with a severed horse's head, a golden bull's head, a crystal ball, and 300 golden bees, the symbol of the Merovingian line. These bees were later attached to the coronation robe of Napoleon Bonaparte, by the way, who had married a Merovingian princess in order to connect himself symbolically with the ancient kingly line. This was another similarity between the Merovingians and the Egyptian pharaohs. Both were considered to be priest kings and living incarnations of the divine. This was seen as the basis for the authors of the book Holy Blood, Holy Grail. They saw it as evidence for a Merovingian descent from Christ, and a long-standing local tradition does indeed link them with that bloodline, the Davidic bloodline, making them, by definition, a Grail family. The knowledge of this remarkable ancestry was purportedly the impetus behind the pact made between Merovaeus' grandson, King Clovis I, and the Roman Catholic Church, the year 469 AD, bestowing upon him the title New Constantine and control over a vast kingdom which provided the prototype for the Holy Roman Empire. This title was, according to the pact, to be passed down to his descendants from that moment on in exchange for his conversion to the faith of Christianity from paganism, the occult world. The idea, according to Holy Blood, Holy Grail, was that by employing the Merovingians and allowing them to spread their empire, they could keep the priest kings under their thumb, so to speak, and silent about their divine lineage, which could be devastating for the hegemony of the Roman faith. For several generations, this agreement was actually adhered to. And the baptism of Clovis was fondly remembered as an event, commonly depicted in ancient seals with the king being submerged in a grail-like cup. But in the year 679 AD, the church broke their very own past in the most devastating of ways. By the time the Merovingian king Dagobert II was born in 651 AD, the power of the throne had already been weakened, with authority increasingly being taken over, usurped by court chancellors known as mayors of the palace. On the death of his father, the five-year-old Dagobert was kidnapped by then-palace mayor Grimwald, who tried to put his own son on the throne. Human compassion saved young Dagobert from death, and he was exiled to Ireland, only to return years later and reclaim his throne in 679. But the problems of the mayors of the palace continued. Apparently displeased with Dagobert's lack of allegiance and devotion to the faith, a problem seen in previous Merovingian kings as well, the Roman Catholic Church entered into a conspiracy with Mayor Pimpin the Fat. December 23rd, while on a hunting trip in the haunted sacred wood area of the Forest of Wolves. Dagobert was lanced through his eye by his own godson, supposedly on Papin's orders. With the Roman Catholic endorsement, Papin passes political power on to his son, Charles Martel, which began the Carolingian dynasty that would later become so famous. After that, the Merovingian bloodline fades into obscurity. All later Merovingian kings rendered essentially powerless. Are they coming back? Only this time to usurp the entire globe. They certainly have the wherewithal, the power to do it. As they meet in South Wales for their Arthurian round table with NATO and what to do in Ukraine, in Iraq, Syria against ISIS. This has been A View from Space. Talk Radio AM 640. Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space and I'm out.